Chapter 4.
They expect a fight, but the TIE following after the Halo turns back before breaking atmosphere and returns to the surface of Vorlag. Considering how those things are usually like burrs stuck to your back, Nora half wonders if there's something they don't know. Maybe they're flying into a trap, or out into some random asteroid field that the TIE would never survive. And even then, wouldn't it continue to follow? But the Imperial fighter turns and goes, lobbing off a few lazy shots before peeling away and disappearing. Temin sits at the controls and says,
"That was weird."
"It was."
Though she starts to round on a theory.
"Maybe the Empire is hurting that bad. Maybe they can't stand to lose even a single TIE. Or maybe they just don't care anymore."
"You mean, maybe we're winning?"
Temin asks.
"Maybe we are, Tim. Maybe we are."
The burst of confidence and comfort in her heart doesn't last long. Outside the cockpit, in the belly of the Halo, loud voices rise in a clamor.
"Uh-oh. Stay here and start setting hyperspace coordinates," she tells her son,
then gets up and heads into the gunship's belly. The Halo isn't big. The cockpit is cramped. The main hold can barely contain them all at once. Behind that is the head and the two-person brig, and then two bunk rooms. All the way aft is the engineering room, and it's not a room so much as it is a crawl space you have to shimmy up into in order to get anything done. This is a ship for quick trips, not long-haul flying. There isn't much privacy to be found. Arguments in this ship go big. They refuse to be contained. In the main hold, Jazz is crouched next to Sinjir, whose arm is swollen up like a blood-sucking bloatworm. He winces, his brow damp, as she dabs at it with some sort of goopy, tacky unguent found in a half-empty medkit up front. Bones stands nearby, beaked droid, head swiveling from person to person, to watch the exchange. Above her stands John Burrell, angrily berating her and punctuating every word with an air stab of his thick, calloused finger.
"You don't just change the plan without giving us some kind of signal. We could have been killed, Amari. We could have..."
The bounty hunter stands up fast, like she's ready to strike.
But instead, all she does is smile and pat his cheek like he's a child and she's his mother.
"I didn't change the plan, Burrell. That was the plan all along."
His face is dumbstruck. Jom looks to Nora and wordlessly asks an obvious question. What is she talking about? But Nora doesn't know. So she asks,
"Jazz, what do you mean?"
"I mean,"
Jazz says, opening up bins and pulling out drawers as if she's looking for something,
"that I always planned it that way."
"You didn't tell us that, did you?"
Jom grabs her and wheels her around, but Amari breaks his hold fast and shoves him back hard.
"Hey!"
"Don't,"
she warns.
"You planned to double-cross us all along, didn't you?"
Jom asks. She shakes her head.
"Triple-cross. I swear, Burrell, you are as daft as that tatty carpet of yark fur you wear on your face."
"Why?"
Nora asks.
"Why would you do that?"
Jazz bares her teeth.
"Did you see the bounty poster? We're all on it. My face included. I'm a bounty hunter with a bounty on our head. I have been compromised. There exists no way that Slusson and Geddy were going to just let me waltz in there and scurry around this dung pile of a palace like some little don't-pay-attention-to-me spider. I had a play, and I went with it. I sold you out. Then, when they were distracted with you, I snuck my way into Geddy's room and waited for him. I paid one of the stable slaves to put keys around the Horoth beast's necks. Then I waited."
A twinkle shines in her eye.
"Besides,"
she says, patting her pockets, "they jingle."
"That means I got paid twice, which is never a bad thing, right? I really do have bills."
"You should have told us,"
Nora seethes.
You don't get it, do you? This is what I do, but it's not what you do.
Jaz Amari's finger draws an invisible perimeter in the air, containing both Nora and Jom.
You're a pair of bright-eyed rebel saps in the bag for the good of the galaxy. You're not bounty hunters. You're not one of the bad guys. I am. I can fake it. I can lie and cheat and swindle and smile the whole time. That's not who you are. I can't trust you not to blow it.
Sinjir woozily lifts his blister red arm.
Hello? I was told I might get a Bacta shot. Anybody? No?
Did he know?
Jom snarls, pointing at the ex-Imperial, then accusing Sinjir directly.
Did you?
I did not,
Sinjir answers, a bit testily.
I did.
They all turn. There stands Temin, beaming.
What?
He asks, showing his palms defensively. Nora sees a glimmer of his father in the boy's eyes. Just then, a playful, puckish gleam.
Jazz trusted me and said it was the right thing to do. She said I had to be ready.
Nora gapes. Her son lied to her.
Again,
she reminds herself. She does her level best to tamp down the sudden flux of anger rising inside, but she feels suddenly, woefully out of control. Like things are slipping out of her hands and spiraling away. Her son, this team, this mission. So when Jom points to her and says,
"Control your boy,"
he is the unwitting recipient of her fury, lashing out like a crackling vibro-whip.
"I'm the leader of this team,"
she says, her words hissing through clenched teeth.
"Not you. I'll handle him how I choose."
"Maybe you shouldn't be leader,"
he says with a half shrug that somehow manages to be aggressive.
"Well, she is our leader,"
Jazz says, shoving past him.
"You don't like it? Go find another starship to hit your grav ref to. I'm sure Spec Forces would be glad to have you back, stinking up their air with your ego. Now get out of my way, Borel. I need to get that Bacta shot and some gauze for Mr. Calamari arm over there."
At that, Sinjir pouts.
"That hurts my feelings. More than a little."
Nora wheels on her son and pokes him in the chest.
"You,"
she says under her breath,
"you and I will have a conversation about this."
"Uh-oh,"
he says.
"Uh-oh is right."
She's hoping for now the fight is done, but it's far from over. Even as Jazz excuses herself to search the bunk room for another medkit, preferably one with a Bacta shot, Borel follows after her, still barking mad.
"Wait right here,"
Nora tells her son, then goes to break up the fight once and for all.
"I knew I never should have trusted you,"
he says, standing in the doorway as Jazz roots around in one of the underbunks.
"Bringing some bounty hunter on board. Antilles must have had his head knocked around real good while caught in the Empire's clutches."
Jazz laughs, finally finding a capped Bacta shot.
"You've got it spun around, Borel. This team needs someone like me. They don't need some thick-skulled, law-bound brute who has all the imagination of an overturned minecart. We need moral flexibility."
"I'm flexible. I've got imagination."
He storms into the room, fists at his side.
"I'm not just one of your marks. I can handle myself."
Whap! Jazz slaps him hard with an open palm.
"Can you? Really?"
He reels for a moment, rubbing his face. His jaw crackles and pops as he moves it left and right. That moment is over fast.
"Why, you little—"
he growls and steps into a fighting stance, two fists up in front of his face, legs placed apart. Jazz begins to pace the half circle in front of him, her limbs down and loose. He bats at her, but she blocks it. She kicks out with a leg and he turns inward, taking the hit on the outside of his knee. The two of them move around each other like a pair of wild-eyed creatures shoved together in the same cage. Nora shouts.
Quit it, both of you! You're not a couple of mating Mura locking horns!
The Spec Forces officer slaps at Jazz with a wide paw, but she bows her back, handily letting it catch open air. The bounty hunter moves fast, hooking her leg around his and wheeling herself onto his back. Her arms tuck under his pits, and her fingers lace behind his neck. Chum roars! He tilts back, his boot jabbing out and connecting with the door controls. And the bunkroom portal slams shut.
When Nora tries to open it, she finds it locked.
Inside, the clamor rises. Something falls. Bang! A rattle.
Grunting.
Suddenly, the space outside the door is crowded. Temin to her left, Sinjir to her right. The droid, Bones, humming some mad song behind.
Can either of you get this door open?
She asks. She tries the button again, but the door won't budge.
Man, you're really fighting, Temin says.
Sinjir tilts his ear toward the door. His eyes narrow.
Well, they were fighting.
Still sounds like they...
But the boy's eyes go big as moons.
Oh.
Even Bones whistles, a warbling, discordant note. Which means that Nora is officially the last one to figure out what's going on. They're not in there fighting at all, are they? Beyond the door, something bangs, then rattles, then falls. Jom growls. Jazz laughs. Kissing sounds. Those are kissing sounds.
I choose to ignore all of this for now,
Nora says, taking a deep breath.
Tem, go plot for hyperspace and get us back to Chandrilla. And take him with you.
By him, she means Bones. The boy and the droid wander off, leaving Nora and Sinjir standing in front of the door.
I never got my back to shot,
Sinjir says.
I think you're going to have to wait.
If I wait much longer, I fear the arm might pop like a bladder bug. It really hurts,
he pouts.
It's really gross.
Nora sighs.
Fine, come on. Let's go see if there's another med kit in the second bunk room.
In a sing-songy voice, he answers,
Thank you, Mom.
Don't call me that.
You're no fun.
That is becoming abundantly clear, Sinjir.
The Halo drops out of hyperspace. There, looming into view, is Chandrilla. A small, blue-green planet, now the home of the nascent New Republic. Nearly idyllic, Nora thinks, with its calm seas and rolling hills. The weather is mild. The seasons are present, but never dramatic. The people are peaceful. If a bit haughty and pedantic and over-invested in every political maneuver and measure that proceeds through the Galactic Senate.
This would be a good place to call home, she thinks.
Then looks over at her son.
Are you good?
She asks. He cocks an eyebrow.
I'm golden.
She doesn't think he's lying. But her skill at reading people fails to match that of Sinjir, who can cut you into your constituent parts with a half-second glance.
I need you to trust me, she tells him.
I do.
He narrows his eyes.
This is about the Jazz thing, isn't it? Mom, it's like she told you.
Life is a series of moments.
Nora suddenly stops talking, then pinches the bridge of her nose and sighs loudly.
Gods, I'm about to give you one of those talks, aren't I? I hated when my mother gave me these talks, and usually I went out and did the opposite of what she told me to do. And that's what you're going to do, because you're my son. So stupid.
Fine.
He rolls his eyes.
It's not stupid. Go on, give it to me. I promise I won't, like, barf into my hands or anything.
Nora hesitates.
It's just... I just want you to be good. To be good with yourself. And to know where you belong. Not where you think other people want you to belong, but where you really belong. In here.
She puts her hand on his chest. And he makes a goofy face because this is really very mawkish and sentimental, and they both know it.
You sticking with Jazz? You're not a bounty hunter. You don't have to be like her. You can be a soldier, but...
Again, she bites her tongue and growls past it.
You know what? You don't have to be a soldier either. I just want you to be you. And not worry about what the rest of the galaxy thinks you should be.
I think the galaxy wants me to be a crazy rich droid manufacturer living in a palace on the outer rim.
There again, his father's playful twinkle flickering in his eye.
Then go be that,
she says, laughing. He cups his hand to his ear.
Or maybe the galaxy is saying to become a lounge singer in a backwater space station cantina. I can belt him out.
Now, I don't know about that.
Oh, wait. I think I'm gonna be a Jedi.
Now I know your brain is busted.
She gestures toward the viewscreen.
Take us down to Hanas City. Gently this time, or Wedge will have your head. And maybe mine.
The arm looks, well, better, but not much. The angry redness has cooled down to a somewhat aggravated pink. The blisters have faded, but have been replaced with craters of dry, puckered skin. Sinjir's arm looks like old meat left to hang too long on a butcher's hook. At least it has all its feeling back.
He wiggles his fingers.
The skin feels uncomfortably tight. Blessedly, Nora found some painkillers.
Hello, hand, he tells his hand.
Hello, Sinjir,
he makes his hand tell him back. From around the corner of the main hold comes the sound of a door hissing open. And who should waltz out but John Burrell?
Your hair is a bit of a mess, Sinjir says.
Hmm?
John's gaze rolls up, where his hair is sticking out.
Oh.
Here, let me help you.
Sinjir stands, and fast as a spark is standing right in front of John. He gently begins to move the man's hair back in place.
Well, isn't this romantic?
Ah, yes. Speaking of romance, I'm really glad you brought it up, Jombie. Did you have a nice fight with our resident bounty hunter?
She knows how to, fight.
Oh, I'm sure she does.
As Sinjir continues to adjust the man's hair, one strand at a time, and by now Jom is starting to look more than a little uncomfortable, he lets a vicious fox-like grin stretch across his face.
Curious bit of trivia. As you know, when I served at the pleasure of the Empire, I served as a loyalty officer, and sometimes extracting loyalty from my fellows took a bit of doing. I learned that the human body has 434 trigger points of pain. I know it lacks humility to say, but I actually discovered another 3 all by myself. Although amending an Imperial training manual is like trying to move a boulder with a spoon, you know. All this is a very long road to a very simple destination. I am excellent at causing pain.
John pulls his head away from Sinjir's grooming efforts.
Are you threatening me, Rathvelis? It sure sounds that way.
I am. And for good reason. I want you to know that if you hurt Jazz Imari in any way, emotionally, physically, I mean even if you accidentally step on her foot, then I will personally make sure to find all 434... Oh, sorry... I mean 437 trigger points on your body. Are we clear?
A strange calm settles over John, which Sinjir finds rather unexpected. He suspected that his little speech would goad the man into fighting. Burrell seems hot-headed after all. But that's not what's happening here, is it? Instead, John crosses his arms and nods.
Your loyalty to her is commendable,
the commando says.
I'll take your, words of wisdom under advisement. Though if I'm being honest, I suspect if anybody will get hurt in this arrangement, it'll be me.
Likely.
And that wouldn't bother you at all?
Sinjir gives a half shrug.
All right, fine. Let me ask, though. What's your deal with her? I was led to believe you and she would not be... romantically compatible.
This isn't about that. I value her tremendously. I feel connected to her. I think she's a friend. Or the closest thing to.
He says that word, friend, like it's a foreign word, in an alien tongue, whose full contextual meaning he has not yet grasped.
For a time, I thought maybe you had your eye on me.
Jom is just goading him, but he decides to play along.
I did. It's the facial hair. But I'm spoken for now.
Jom smirks.
Really?
Really.
Good for you, mate.
Sinjir puts one more stray hair on the commando's head back in place.
Have fun with Jazz. And remember the number 437.
The halo starts to shudder. The walls are shielded, but still the sudden warmth bleeding off them is telling, even as the ship bucks along clouds, like a stone skipped across a pond.
Sounds like we're down. Better secure the prisoner, Jombi.
Landing platform OB-99. In one direction are the rolling hills and sweeping meadows of Chandrilla. The soft balm grass and spiky orchanthus are already returning from red to green with the coming of spring. And the sun and clouds cast shifting, shimmering shadows over the land. In the other direction is the Silver Sea, its placid waters as calm and gray as slate. Out over the water, bands of dark clouds roll, spitting rain and pulsing lightning. Another symptom of the season shifting from winter into spring. Standing off to the side and leaning against a stack of crates is Wedge Antilles. Temin is first off the ramp, and he runs over to Antilles. The two of them clasp hands and embrace.
Hey, Snap,
Wedge says, a nickname he's given Temin because of the boy's finger-snapping habit. Bones trots after, his skeletal arms going wide.
I too will share an embrace with Master Antilles to simulate joy.
Wedge leans away from the hug as the droid wraps his many jointed arms around the captain, looking less like a human sharing camaraderie and more like an insect trying to eat the face of its mate.
Okay,
the droid says. Apparently satisfied, it lets go and begins dancing around the landing platform in dramatic swoops, pliés, and pirouettes.
Sorry, Temin says, shrugging. He's trying to learn how to be more human and less...
Singing, dancing, murder bot?
Wedge asks.
Yeah.
Bones has been Temin's bodyguard and friend now for a while. And once he rebuilt his pal from spare parts, thankfully rescuing the data brain from the New Republic soldiers who secured the Akivan Palace, he was surprised when the droid declared a desire to fit in better with the crew. Apparently it was something Sinjir said to the droid about how he creeped them all out. Temin fears that the droid's attempts have only made him more creepy, but yay for effort.
Oh man, Wedge, you should have seen me out there. I was piloting the Halo, right? And we were swooping along the edge of Slussen Kanker's mountaintop fortress, and... All right, Snap,
Wedge says, laughing.
Ease off the throttle a minute. I need to talk to your mom. You can tell me more from the seat of my X-Wing tomorrow morning. Deal? Whoa! Yeah! Yes, deal!
Wedge has been giving Temin time in the X-Wing. He said Temin has a natural gift for piloting a fighter. Like his mother. Though Nora wasn't exactly happy about her son following in her steps as a pilot. Wedge lets the boy run training exercises out over the Silver Sea. At the time, he said to the kid,
I'm cooking up a little something called Phantom Squadron. Maybe by the time you're spaceworthy, you'd be interested in joining up.
Temin hasn't told his mother about that yet.
He's not even sure that's what he wants either. Sometimes Temin's mind drifts and fantasies play out. Okay, no, he doesn't really want to be a lounge singer in some crummy cantina. But the bounty hunter life sounds pretty great. Go where you want, track down the bad guys, get paid to do it. But being a pilot gives him a thrill like no other. Cutting clouds with the scissor foils of Wedge's old X-Wing is the scariest and most amazing thing. And then again, he still misses his black market dealings on Akiva. The danger of the deal, the joy of the sale, the buzz from peddling illicit weapons, parts, and droids to thugs and criminals who might kill you for looking at them wrong. Temin doesn't know what he wants to be. He mentioned it to Sinjir a few weeks back, and the ex-Imperial shrugged. He was a bit sauced at the time on Corellian sap wine, and said,
"Nobody knows who they are or what they want, and most people just wait for everyone to tell them. Then they line up and do what they're told. My only advice to you, boy."
He burped then, and never got around to giving the advice because he passed out. Maybe one day. For now, Temin only knows that he's so excited to get back in the cockpit, he's almost jumping out of his own skin.
Captain Antilles. Lieutenant Wexley.
A cool breeze kicks up over the landing platform as the rain clouds drift closer. Temin circles his droid, kicking the metal skeleton in the hindquarters with his boot, and then waiting for Bones to chase after, which the droid does, like an eager friend.
Wedge smiles,
then grabs his cane and moves toward Nora, embracing her as they meet.
"Much nicer than when the droid did it,"
he says, giving her one last lingering squeeze before letting her go.
"Bones?"
she laughs.
"Oh, he's harmless." "Well, not harmless."
I get it. "How'd the mission go?"
"We bagged Getty,"
she says, looking over her shoulder. Nobody's emerged with the prisoner yet, though here comes Sinjir down the plank. Chin up, lips puckered like he's proud of himself about something.
"Off to get a pint of something,"
he calls, and then heads right for the stairway.
"Toodles!"
She thinks to call after him with some motherly admonishment, but she stays her tongue and gives Wedge a slightly embarrassed look.
"It's a rough crew, but they work. How's your treatment?"
"Physical therapy is good, and they're giving me Cerulean injections now. They say I might be in a cockpit again by the end of the year. But it's fine. I like this. I like commanding, too."
She doesn't have to possess Sinjir's gift with body language to suss out Wedge's lie.
He'd do anything to get back behind the flight stick. His whole body seems to hunger for it.
"Never mind that, Nora. There's someone who wants to..."
"We've got a problem!"
There, standing on the ramp, is John Burrell. Nora gives him a shrugging, half-irritated look like, "Well, go ahead, get on with it."
"It's Getty,"
he says.
"He's dead."
The Imperial Vice Admiral's body lies there on the table in the main hold of the Halo. His lips are slick with spit froth. His skin's already gone pale and gray. Dark striations mark the brow and draw shadowy lines around the mouth and wide-open eyes. Nora is reminded how something seems truly gone when someone dies. It's not just about the little micro-movements of the body or a chest no longer rising and falling. It's something deeper, something less tangible, less substantial. She has little cause these days to think over long about the nature of a soul, but maybe the Force really exists. And if it does, it is gone from this body, sure as anything. It's like nothing connects it to the world anymore. It's just meat on the slab.
"Simple,"
Burrell says, solving the mystery.
He was a spicehead. He'd just taken a pinch before we took him. Wouldn't be the first addict to take too much and go sucking void, would he?
Jazz, Nora says. How hard did you knock him out?
Please, I'm a professional. I don't make mistakes like that.
Wedge scratches his head.
We'll have to do an inquiry. I'll call down and get a couple of droids to take the body to Dr. Slakartha. He'll give the body the once-over and rule out any malfeasance.
You can take the body to whoever you want, but I assure you, this man was murdered.
Jazz stoops down and gets her face near to the corpse's. Cupping her hands, she scoops air near his mouth and takes a long, deep sniff.
That smell, bitter citrine, like a too ripe kakadu fruit. And see the fluid in the mouth?
She peels back his lip, already gone stiff. Saliva there has pooled, but it's neither white nor clear. It's bruised dark.
He was poisoned. Chytrogorgia, a.k.a. cerulean slime mold. It goes dry, then you powder it, and then, well, if I had a guess, someone sprinkled it in the spice tin, ensuring that he'd blissfully off himself without a clue in the world.
Wedge and Nora share a look. He says,
I'll tell the doc. Thanks.
At least we don't need to waste time or money on a trial, Jump says. This guy killed a whole lot of people, sometimes poisoning whole worlds. Whoever did him in has a good sense of irony, you ask me.
Outside the ship, Nora tells Wedge,
I'm sorry, Wedge. It's our job to bring these guys in alive, not dead. I assure you, it wasn't one of us. I know I said we're a rough crew, but we're not that rough.
It's okay. I know. Whatever this was, it wasn't that.
Okay, good.
But he's still on the cusp of something.
What?
Someone wants to meet you.
Us? The team?
Just you.
Who? And when?
Princess Leia. And she wants to meet right now.